Welcome to the Consumer Insights Podcast. Every episode, we speak with an insights leader in one of the world's leading brands to hear how they're integrating consumer insights into strategy to move business forward. I'm your host, Thor Olav Filogen. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Consumer Insights Podcast. Today, I'm excited to have a truly inspiring insights leader joining me for what I know will be a fascinating conversation. Michael Bartels is the Senior Director of Enterprise Research at Tobii, a global leader in eye tracking solutions and services to study human behavior. Prior to his roles at Tobii, Michael was a senior project manager at the eye tracking solutions provider, EyeTracking, and received his master's in experimental psychology from San Diego State University. Thank you so much for joining me today, Michael.
And thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Firstly, could you take a couple of minutes to tell us about yourself, your company, and how you got to where you are today? I noticed that you have a few different titles on LinkedIn. I take it you're wearing a few different hats at Tobii.
I am. We all wear many hats at Tobii. Yeah, so my journey in the eye tracking industry began roughly 15 years ago while I was getting my master's at San Diego State. Like many graduate students, I was looking for a little extra cash. So I started interning one of my professor's companies called Eye Tracking Inc. I had no idea what eye tracking was, no idea this technology existed. But as soon as I saw it, I was hooked. I knew this was something I wanted to be involved in. And after I graduated, I started as a data collector researcher there, moved up to a senior researcher. A few years later, I moved over to Tobii, the global leader in eye tracking, and have slowly but surely gone from insights research to director of our enterprise team over there. It's been a whirlwind journey over the last 15 years or so, and I've got to see all different sides of this business, all different use cases for this technology, and really happy to have been involved in it.
And tell me, I mean, having spent 15 years in the industry, I'm sure you have an opinion on the definition of an insight. So how would you as an insights leader define an insight?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I would first say what an insight is not. An insight is not data. It's not a report. It's not results. An insight is sort of the intersection between those results and some sort of business impact. It's sort of that aha moment where you suddenly understand something about your consumers or your customers that wasn't clear to you in the past. And in the course of our work, we see this from all different sources. We see this coming out of interviews. We see this coming out of surveys. We see this coming out of biometric data. And of course, the place we most like to see it come out of is from the eye tracking data. Giving brands the opportunity to literally see through the eyes of their customers is really conducive to drawing out those insights, because often what we'll hear in surveys and what we'll hear in interviews has sort of a filter on it, sort of a social desirability filter that that consumers tend to have, where they tend to simplify things or want to sound like a cheerleader for whatever brand they're testing. But the eyes don't lie. When you're able to see through that person's eyes, the insights can be very, very clear and very concise.
And in your view, talking about these aha moments, right? What is it that makes market and consumer insights so important? And in particular, the types of insights gained from eye tracking?
I think one of the things that happens a lot with brands, whether you're creating a website or creating a package design or designing a retail store, is you can sort of get into this bubble. Let's take an e-commerce platform, for example. You're working on this every day. You and your team know it inside and out. To you, it is the perfectly functioning creature of UX, but your consumers don't live in that world. They don't live in that bubble. They haven't had all these same experiences and had hundreds of hours playing around with it to get to know how it works. So often what we find is that the people who design packages and platforms and retail experiences are sort of in the dark about how things are actually going to be experienced in the real world. And that's why it's so important to do research. That's why it's so important to draw out these insights from your actual consumers. And eye tracking in particular is a great tool for this because, you know, there really isn't a better way to experience your product along with your consumer than through their eyes. You get to see where they get hung up, what they missed, what they pay attention to, what are the things that they struggle with, what are the things that really delight them and they tend to focus on for longer periods of time. Pairing that with other research methodologies does get you out of that bubble and get you into this view where you can uncover some of these insights that would have been hidden otherwise.
I'd like to maybe talk about a comment you made recently on LinkedIn about the power of research that, I quote, quantifies the things we already think know to be true, end of quote, rather than offering new and counterintuitive insight. Could you elaborate more on this?
Yeah, absolutely.
And could you also tell us a bit more about the study behind it?
Absolutely. So to your first question, I think there's sort of a bias toward research that blows our minds and is counterintuitive and is something that, you know, you never would have expected. But the truth is that is a very small percentage of the actual research that is done. Most of the consumer insights research that's done is confirmatory research of a hypothesis that you already have or something that you already suspect, or just kind of foundational research where perhaps there isn't a hypothesis, but you really just want to understand the consumer better. So it doesn't have this big light bulb that goes off and this mind-blowing effect, but it is very important. We do need to confirm those things that we think to be true and make sure that they are scientifically valid. And we also need to put numbers behind those hypotheses. So for example, if you know that, let's take this specific study, for example, one of the hypotheses in this study was if we place ads in the context of the ad, it's going to be more likely to capture and hold attention. So for example, if you are selling a smartphone, put it on TechCrunch or some techie website rather than Better Homes and Gardens, and it's more likely to be seen, noticed, and remembered. That's intuitive, right? That's not mind-blowing, but running this study, throwing these web pages out to a few hundred consumers, tracking their eye movements as they view the page, allows us to say exactly what that difference is. So people seeing these ads 80% faster when they're in a context versus out of context, or spending 3 more seconds on average looking at these ads, or being 4 times more likely to recall these ads. Those types of numbers give a magnitude to the effect that we see, and you're able to understand just how big a difference this makes and just how big a priority it should be for your company to put these ads in context.
That's super interesting. And I think to your point there about actually understanding the magnitude of whatever we might already have suspected, I think also has enormous value. If we talk a bit about Tobii's eye tracking tools, you measure customer attention for actionable insights. And in your opinion, how does this method stack up against other consumer research methodologies?
Yeah, good question. First of all, I wouldn't put it in a stack against other methodologies necessarily. We tend to think of eye tracking as a complementary methodology for whatever else you might be doing. We always recommend that it's used alongside qualitative methods, other types of biofeedback methods, other types of big data. Whatever you're already using, eye tracking can sort of be an enhancement to that or give you another data stream that's giving you a kind of a different look at consumer behavior than anything else. In terms of how it compares, some of the advantages are the objectivity. This is sort of the number one advantage. You're recording exactly where someone's eyes are pointed in real time and seeing that data sort of unfiltered. And there's really no way for a consumer to mislead you with where their eyes are looking. You're seeing their natural experience and able to draw insights from it. So that objectivity is a big piece of it. Another thing that's sort of happened in recent years is it's become very unobtrusive. When I started doing this 15 years ago, you'd wear this giant headset with these big cameras under your eyes, and it was kind of tight. Calibration was arduous. It sort of felt like you were in some kind of a medieval torture device. Those days are long gone. We're able to do eye tracking with the webcam on your computer in the comfort of your own home if you choose to participate in one of those studies. I also have the newest, latest, greatest wearable system here.
Wow.
And you can see it's really
looks like a regular pair of glasses.
Just a regular pair of glasses. It has tiny cameras and illuminators built into the lenses. You'll be able to see these, but
very cool.
Yeah. And so it creates an extremely natural experience and allows you to get quite objective data on types of behaviors that otherwise you can't see.
That's so interesting. And to have gone through that evolution, you know, from those medieval devices, right? I mean, to where you are now is a journey of itself. And I imagine that with machine learning, that you also were able to accelerate the type of analysis you could do off of the data that you collect. And if we spend a bit more time about talking about your career and your experience integrating insights, could you tell us and maybe give us an example of when you've been able to integrate insights to fuel some level of innovation, you know, or it can be improving a campaign or a project or a product, and maybe walk us through the different steps, you know, kind of what were the insights that created the opportunity? How did you, what was the insight you identified? Which team found it? And, you know, kind of how were you able to use it to get to some form of end result?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say 60% of the work that we do is in shopper research, understanding how people work in retail environments when they're filling up their cart, trying to decide what they're going to make for dinner and feed their kids and all those important decisions. And typically what happens is Tobi offers sort of two different types of solutions. We do offer the hardware and software. So brands that want to take this in-house and do their own research can get their own eye tracking system and software. We also offer services through our insight team. And I think that's sort of more where your question's focused. So I'll kind of stick with that angle. So a typical study, a brand would come to us and say, hey, we're very interested in understanding this particular aspect of the consumer experience. We'd like to be a fly on the wall, see through their eyes as they're doing this shopper journey. And the things that we're interested in are, where should we put promotional signage? Where should we put our products on the shelf? Like how does our planogram perform compared with our competitors? And are we missing any opportunities where we could put products that are sort of high attention, high value real estate in terms of where people are looking? So our typical study might be somewhere between 50 and 500 consumers who would be recruited to go shop in a store. They would wear these glasses while they're doing that. The instructions are very low touch. We don't want to give them a list of things to do. We want to sit there and observe natural behavior. It's pretty much put on these glasses, go shop as you normally would, come find me when you're finished. And that way, we're not interrupting them. We're not asking them questions along the way. We're not making them second guess their decisions. They sort of often forget they're wearing the glasses a few minutes into the shop. And I know this because I've had to chase people into the parking lot to get them back before because they forgot that they were wearing them. But the kinds of insights, I can give you a few examples that are public and we can share from a study like this. One of our clients was interested in understanding whether or not they should sort of tag along with attention that's going to upper navigation in a retail store as people are navigating. They're looking to see what items are in the aisle. Maybe there should be a promotional sign for their product on those signs as well. And what we found was only around 10% of the people in the study were actually looking at that signage. They identify which aisle to go down by looking at the products in the aisle, not looking up at the signage in most cases. especially in familiar stores. So we were able to sort of say, that's not really a great piece of visual real estate. You're much better off putting things at shelf level that sort of come out perpendicular to the shelf. That's where people's attention tends to be focused. They're sort of lasered in on finding the products in this chaotic mess of the shelf. We are also able to sort of dispel some myths about putting products at eye level. Namely, if you want something to be seen, it should be at eye level on the shelf. If you actually look at eye tracking data while somebody's walking down an aisle, what you see is that their eyes are kind of oriented down instead of being oriented at eye level. And if you have a new product that you're trying to get noticed, it's actually going to get more attention if it's slightly below eye level where people are actually focusing. So those are some of the kinds of insights. I could literally go on all day, but does that sort of answer your question about what a study like that would look like?
Definitely. And I hope I'll get to have dinner with you sometime, because I'm sure you'll be able to share even more of those good insights.
Yeah, it'll be a super fun dinner.
Tell me, with over 15 years of experience in eye tracking, how have you seen the field evolve? And especially when it comes to studying consumer behavior.
Yeah, I would say in the early days, eye tracking was known as a tool for getting a heat map. And a heat map is this graphic that's an intensity plot of attention. There are hot spots where people look, and there are cold spots where people don't look. It's a useful visualization, but it sort of came to define the entire methodology and technology in a way that was very limiting. In the years since, we've seen eye tracking become much more a part of understanding the qualitative experience. So yes, it's about this aggregate view of where attention is focused, but perhaps even more importantly, it's about seeing through the consumer's eyes, watching those videos, being able to experience that consumer journey with them and pull out insights from what they look at, what they miss, where they focus, and all of those kinds of things. So it's become much more of a dynamic methodology. It's become much more closely tied to the follow-up interview. In many cases, we'll do something called the retrospective think aloud, where somebody will go shop in a store or use a website. And then instead of asking them questions and interrupting them during that process, we'll play back the eye tracking video afterwards and say, could you just talk me through your experience? Tell me why you looked here, why you picked this up, why you laughed at this point when you were reading the back of the package. And it's really a useful cue for the consumer to be able to see their eye movements and relive that experience and then talk through everything that happened in a way that's much richer than a traditional follow-up interview. So that's been a major change, is just that shift from, hey, this is just kind of a quantitative visual tool, to this is something that allows us to really capture that experience live and integrate it into our qualitative findings as well. The other thing that's changed is that people have actually heard of it. When I started and I would tell people what I did for a living, there was a very long pause, and then they would change the subject because it was just really confusing. Now it's really out there, and I think it's more than just the research. Toby's working to put eye tracking systems in automobiles to make driver safety safer, putting eye trackers into VR headsets for gaming. There's just a ton of different applications now for this technology. When I mention what I do now, the eyes don't glaze over, and people sometimes even have a follow-up question. So that's kind of nice to see as well.
And having been in the industry for so long and telling us a bit about kind of the cutting edge of what you are now able to do with eye tracking, what tools do you believe are essential to support insights professionals, and why?
I think I would say more than anything else, there are so many tools out there right now, and it's always good for brands to use a wide breadth of tools in their research, making sure they're getting quantitative data, qualitative data, big data, thick data, small data, all the data types to really paint a full picture of what's happening. And I would say part of the challenge is being able to organize all of that and communicate all of that within an organization. And also, with as quickly as people tend to move on to new opportunities these days, you know, nobody stays at a company as long as I've stayed at this company, for example. there's a lot of loss of institutional knowledge that happens because there are so many people transitioning out and transitioning in. So I think a company needs a way to organize all this information, onboard new people with these kinds of insights, and just make sure that there's a strong continuity in that organization with the research. I could list 25 different qualitative, quantitative, and otherwise tools that can be used. But for me, the biggest challenge that I see for a lot of companies is just keeping it all straight, keeping it all together, making sure information gets dispersed down among the team. And that's something that's very important.
And Michael, you don't need to convince me about the importance of centralizing and democratizing access to data.
Of course.
But tell me a bit about the teams themselves. What do you believe is the DNA of a successful insights team? What do we need to think about?
Yeah, I would say number one is curiosity. You need to really care about your product and want to understand how consumers are using it. Another one I would say, I think there's a saying in literature and writing that you have to be able to kill your darlings, which means you'll have some beautiful sentence you've written, but if it doesn't work, you can't be afraid to just get rid of it and start over. And that's also true in the world of marketing and marketing research and package design and UX. Sometimes you have some great idea and it just doesn't work out in the world. Consumers just don't get it. They don't like it. They don't want it. And you have to be willing to cut it and change to something that works instead of sort of being married to ideas that the research doesn't support. Yeah, so those are a couple of things that I think are important. Also, just different perspectives. You don't want to have all people who came from the same background and went to the same university and read the same books designing your site. You want a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different viewpoints. I think on an insight team in particular, having a diversity of team is more important than in a lot of other roles.
And you also have experience with academic research as well, from your master's in experimental psychology. From your perspective, how has working with market and UX research compared to the world of academic research? And what were the different skills you needed to develop? And what advice would you give some of our listeners starting out on a similar path?
Yeah, I think it's really just a totally different mindset. In the world of academic research, you want to be as detailed as possible. You want to have 30 sources supporting your findings. You want to make sure everything is sort of scientifically unimpeachable, which is really important and really great in academic and scientific research. Coming over to the world of marketing research, I sort of had to turn off that part of my brain a little bit, because one of the most important things, yes, it's important to be scientifically valid and ethical and for your conclusions to hold water, but you also need to understand that your audience needs to get to the point quickly, and they're going to need to share this around to people in their organization who aren't going to be able to listen to you prattle on for an hour about all of the details. So making things concise, to the point, easy to understand, digestible, working in a short PowerPoint presentation instead of a 20-page journal article, it's a different skill set. In many ways, it's more challenging to capture complex information and communicate it in a very simple way, which is sort of what has to happen in the world of marketing research.
That's super interesting. And what opportunities do you think there are for insights professionals to, building on what you just said, make true business impact and also challenge the status quo?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it depends on how seriously an organization takes consumer insights. We've worked with a lot of brands that, you know, they will run the research study, but the changes that are recommended aren't necessarily taken seriously or implemented. We've worked with other organizations that it's really in their DNA that they take research seriously, they take the voice of their customers seriously. And if the research is done right and done well and done in a way that has business impact, you're going to see that business impact. You're going to see those changes made. So part of it, I think, is structural. If you're working for a company or a brand that takes consumer insights very seriously, you're probably not going to have a lot of pushing to do to get your ideas implemented. Whereas in the other scenario, it can be more difficult. I would say having a team that is curious, objective, diverse, and having an organization that is willing to put them in a game where they have an opportunity to score, that's really the key to making an impact with those insights.
And on the flip side, however, what challenges do you see that could face insights professionals and the wider industry in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of challenges out there. There's a lot happening with automation, big data, everything's going online. So you have a lot of insight professionals with a particular skill set of doing focus groups, meeting people in person, and those sorts of things aren't happening as much anymore. So I feel like you sort of have to be a jack of all trades to be an insight professional these days. You need to understand the qualitative side of things and how to run a focus group in an interview. You also need to understand big data, Google Analytics. You also need to understand how to develop an online survey with all sorts of crazy logic. It's a lot more of a methodologically diverse industry, I would say, than it has been in the past. And that can be very challenging. And also that need to learn the new tools and techniques and technologies in real time as the industry rapidly changes. Another challenge I would say is just sort of challenges in the world. Things were already moving online in terms of the way consumers consume. And then COVID happened and it just rapidly accelerated. The in-store retail experience is still very important, but now pretty much whatever company you work for, you also have to have a UX component and understand the online experience. And that also represents a new challenge.
A big challenge for me at the moment is that we've come towards the end of our conversation, Michael, and I've enjoyed this so much. But I have one last question for you, which is very much centered on inspiration and also appreciation, which is, I'd like for you to tell me, who in the world of customer insights would you love to have lunch with?
Can I say you?
I was caught. I did not anticipate this one. I was hoping for dinner, but lunch would be great, definitely. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough one. Off the top of my head, there are so many people in it. And it's such an incredible field of researchers on both the brand side and the agency side who have so many great ideas. I don't know that I could pick just one. So I'm going to go with the answer of my gracious host on this podcast. Let's do lunch.
Let's do lunch, Michael. I look forward to it and we'll definitely find time. We have a lot of stuff to discuss. I have a bunch of questions I want to ask you that did not make the podcast. So I look forward to that. This has been such an enlightening conversation, Michael. And it's been fantastic to hear about really the cutting edge approach that you guys are pursuing and innovating with at Tobi. I think that there are a lot of things you said that were really powerful and just a reminder for us that, guess what, you know, the world in which you live, many times being very knowledgeable about your product and the way you market it, is not the world in which your consumer lives, and you need to be able to kill your darlings. And although insights are about aha moments, the importance of also having understanding of the magnitude of things we already know or think to be true is super interesting and powerful. And I think a lot of us should take that advice. Michael, I'd like to thank you for joining me today. And I know that I have, and we have, the listeners have learned a great deal from talking to you today. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Consumer Insights Podcast is brought to you by Strivido, the user-friendly enterprise insights platform. To find out more about Strivido, visit strivido.com and make sure to search for Consumer Insights in Apple, Google, Spotify, or anywhere else podcasts are found. click follow so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Stravito, thank you for listening.